We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
FM News Talk 97.1. On demand audio.
Right now, let me get to my guest, please. He is Rodney Boyd, who I'm sure needed to catch up on his sleep after a long week in Jeff City last week. Rodney, how are you?
Hey, man, I am well. What a remarkable journey this session has been. And you were there from the first day to the end, my friend.
Man, I tell you what, there were a few surprises and, quite frankly, at least one big disappointment as far as I was concerned when it came to the fact that at the end of the session, H.J.R. 54, which was Dean Plocker's bill, which seemed to make so much sense to me with or without a Better Together plan on the board, that they couldn't manage to get a vote. And I'd love to find out who the person was responsible for that, not ultimately at least going to the floor for a Senate vote.
Yeah, I mean, I think when Better Together sort of pulled the plug, imploded, it took a lot of wind out of that sail, and there was a huge pivot in the building, as you were very aware, toward the abortion bill, GM, and a couple of other big issues. And so with all of the energy being pulled away from Better Together and focused on trying to get the heartbeat bill passed and the GM package done, there just really was very little oxygen for 54. A lot of people from outstate who had these other priorities just did not see the urgency in that bill at the time. And Dean was working it. I can tell you this, Dean Plocker, the sponsor, for the last 48 hours of session was running around doing everything he could, pushing and pulling. But if you were in the building, the context in that last 48 to 72 hours was all around the abortion bill. And he was over in the Senate, and he was everywhere trying to get it done. It just was not the focus on the issue.
Yeah, I hate to seem conspiratorial, but I suspect there was some pressure being applied as well, because we think Better Together's statewide vote plan is dead, but all we know is that the petition's been withdrawn. As we've learned in the past, that petition had already been withdrawn and refiled a couple of times. I just hate that they wouldn't. That somebody wouldn't have had the foresight to go ahead and try to push this thing through unless there was a lot of pressure on a couple of senators not to let a vote be taken on it, because the people Better Together knew what was going to happen if that passed.
Yeah, and there might be some of that. I didn't see that because of all the focus on a couple of the other big priorities. But as you said a few minutes ago, there were some twists and turns that before the legislative spring break I didn't see coming. And after spring break, the session took on some dimensions and some twists that just were like, wow. I mean, remember, we came back from spring break and we were talking about Title IX in a way that we hadn't been before. We all of a sudden started talking about GM. We started talking about what Missouri's version of the abortion legislation would be. And those conversations turned hot and heavy in a way that before spring break, they were dormant, docile. They were chatter, but they weren't. The volume wasn't as high as they ended up becoming.
Yeah, that's true. The Title IX changes didn't make it through, did they?
No, they did not, sir.
No, I didn't think so.
They did not. They gave way to a bunch of heat and rhetoric and ended up sort of being pulled. The speaker at the end of the day pulled those issues, laid them aside because he wanted to focus on what he considered to be other priorities.
In the House?
In the House. Yes.
Okay. All right. So they never even made it out of the House. I wasn't sure because we had a couple people on here talking about that issue. And basically, correct me if I'm wrong, Rodney, that's the one that changed the way sexual assault allegations were dealt with on a college campus, correct?
Absolutely. That's exactly what it did. Yep.
It guaranteed that the accused had more of an equal voice, or some, depending on how you want to look at it. Obviously, the opponents might not phrase it that way, but that fell to defeat. I'm guessing we'll hear about it again.
It was considered adding an element of due process when the accusations are made that doesn't exist in the Title IX system now. And it was very, very controversial. Some people felt like it was it was putting too much pressure on the victims during that phase in the process where they should be free. Others felt like it was necessary because of the lack of due process. At the end of the day, the legislature could not coalesce around what version of this would get through, and they really didn't want to have this consume as much oxygen in the building as it was, and they really did want to get to the abortion issue, finish the budget, deal with the potential GM issue. I mean, a lot of people don't realize how much energy went into that GM package. When it before session, as we said, it wasn't even an issue in the building. It
right.
wasn't something that people were focused on. And the governor very, very politically, savvily attached his workforce deal closing items into that GM package. And that's what led to, if you obviously heard about the near 30-hour filibuster. Remember, before the break, we were talking, and you and I were wondering aloud, could the governor get his workforce agenda passed, the conservatives in the Senate, and ultimately tying it to the GM package became the way he got it done, and he did indeed get it done.
Yeah.
So for Governor Parsons, this proved to be effectively a very good session as far as the agenda items that he outlined. Did
yeah.
he get exactly what he wanted? No. But he got about 90% of it.
Yeah, I had him on last week, and he was taking a little bit of a victory lap because he did get what he wanted in that. And you know, some of the callers here were unhappy with what the governor did, and I wasn't happy with the workforce development side of it and all the extra money that got spent, because I think we should be spending less and not more. But ultimately, in the scheme of things, you do have to admire the fact that you had a governor in there who saw that opportunity and took it. I don't agree with what he attached to that bill and how they did it, but ultimately he kind of put the conservative caucus down there in the Senate between a rock and a hard place and said, if you want the abortion stuff, the pro-life bill, you're going to have to end this filibuster and give us an up or down vote.
No, that was absolutely accurate. You know, and to his credit, whether you like the content of his legislative agenda, this was a governor that was in the hallways. I mean, I saw him the last day of session for 3 or 4 hours lobbying members himself. I hadn't seen that. I've been around Jeff City for a long time. You really don't see governors walking the halls, pulling members aside, telling them why something's important. And so whether you like, once again, the content of what he passed, this was a governor that for the last 10, 12 years was more engaged than any governor I've ever seen, maybe even 20 years. So kudos to Governor Parson for being engaged in the process, being accessible to the members, listening to their thoughts as well, because believe me, he heard as much as he spoke about what he wanted and what people didn't like. So it's a good day. It's a good day when a governor is that accessible to members of the public and members of the assembly.
Yeah. The low-income housing tax credit issue came up again. That didn't end up getting a vote either, did it?
It did not.
I didn't think so.
That is an industry that is comprised of a number of very strong-willed people, sir. and I will tell you that getting to a reform package that pleases all of the members of that coalition is a huge task. And even though there was a lot of effort by different segments of the industry, even the governor tried to bring everyone together into his office and say, okay, let's get a deal. There were some people that just couldn't cross the threshold of what the deal contained. And so ultimately it failed. And it's going to be an issue where the governor seems to have said, okay, then the industry will continue to be dormant, which means there will be no state subsidy, no state allocation for the program going forward. So it's going to force everyone in the interim. And the interim starts effectively now through December 1st to get back in the room and try to figure out what a compromise looks like and bring something forward. Well, you know, the art of compromise, as you know, Mark, is everybody doesn't get what they want. Most people end up relatively unhappy, but the overall package allows people to move forward. And that's where they're going to have to get on low-income housing tax credits in Missouri if the program's ever going to come back into utilization.
Safe to say that is the issue that probably most marked the Greitens governorship. I mean, he wanted to end that, and in the end, it may well have been that action that ended his governorship.
Well, he did end it. He ended the program. It's still a dormant program.
Right.
It means it's on the books and not being utilized. And it was probably one of the you know, there's a saying, straw that broke the camel's back. You got to remember, Governor Greitens was fighting everybody. He was fighting organized labor. He was fighting the trial lawyers. He took on the pro-choice coalition, and he also took on the entire industry that supports the low-income housing tax credit. And what he did was he brought that coalition together in a very focused way. Which was, hey, get rid of him. So, yeah, it was probably the straw that broke the camel's back, but it was one of a number of aligned forces where people said, we got to get rid of this guy. So the coalition was close. I mean, I heard some of the chatter. It seemed to me they could have, a couple of players could have come to the table and said, okay, we'll sacrifice more, but they just didn't. Holding out for I think what they think is a little bit better, but I think they'll get together. This industry services a lot of parts of the state, not just St. Louis and Kansas City, and the need for what they do is only going to grow and be more pent up. So, you know, it's a big issue. I'm sure it'll be back. In the meantime, we are, for those who listen, we are effectively done with the session until January of next year.
Yeah. I'll say it, Rodney. I would say Governor Greitens brought the low-income housing tax credit industry together in a very forceful way to the tune of about $120,000, if I had to guess.
I believe it's probably a lot more than that.
To quote a specific amount of money that was dropped off with a local attorney, I would guess that's the dollar amount, at least, that it brought them together. So so that didn't make it out of session. So the next question is, PDMP, that didn't get a vote either. And I had an interesting conversation over the weekend with an emergency room physician who's on the front lines in many cases of this opioid battle. And he was expressing to me his extreme disappointment over the fact that they didn't do something on with PDMP, because he talked about some of the successes he saw in other states. And he sees firsthand people coming in there that he knows come to ERs at 2 in the morning with some mystery ailment in hopes of getting their hands on some Oxycontin or whatever the case may be, and he wishes there was some way to track it. That got killed this year.
It did, and I'll tell you, while the political conversation was volatile and unfruitful, the crises outside the building continues to evolve in our state. The challenge is there are a number of conservative legislators who don't believe that the PDMP program is the solution that the proponents keep proffering that it will be. And so I think what's going to have to happen is, once again, like LIHTC, in the interim, people who want the PDMP program are going to not, they're not going to be able to wait until next January. They're going to have to go make the case. We know now clearly that there's at least 4 to 6, maybe more, conservative senators that don't buy it. Somebody's going to have to take the time on the proponent side to go visit individually with these senators, show them why the program works, find out what their particular critique of it is, and try to come up with a package that they can buy into. I think the governor would have signed a PDMP bill. It wasn't on his priority list, so he didn't sort of carry the ball. There is some momentum in the House. The House was able to coalesce around this. And I think the Republicans in the House who want this are going to have to literally take some time this summer and in the fall and convince the conservatives, if they can be convinced, why this is important. And I think there's a way forward. I'm not the proprietor of that way, but I think that you're going to have to take a look at what's worked in some conservative states, what's worked and what has protected citizens in those states. Because, look, there are some very red and conservative states and very conservative legislatures that have passed versions of this. So it's not that it's impossible. I just think the folks that are opposing it here, remember, it was one person last year. Now it's grown to 4 to 6. So the opposition forces are growing, not shrinking. So it's going to take some interim dialogue and some serious conversations and considerations, I think, to get that through next year.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And, I mean, I've talked to a lot of people that are just dead set against any sort of list like that being built that they think would lead to abuses down the road. Rodney, at this point, is there any talk of a special session to maybe get to some of those issues that they didn't get to during the regular session?
I can honestly say zero.
Zero. Okay.
Zero, zero. Zero special session talk. There would have been had there not been an abortion bill, GM, or one of those other mega issues that people were pouring their energy into in the last couple of days, mm-hmm. But there's no talk of that now.
Well, that's good to hear. I know it costs money to do that, and it had to be a pretty major pull for them to be called back into session. Good. Rodney Boyd, listen, thanks for your insight on all of this, and you've been very helpful, as usual, during the legislative session for us, because you're down there all the time, and you kind of have your finger on the pulse. We appreciate it, my friend.
Well, and thank you for opening up your airwaves to the issues in Jefferson City. I know that it's easy for people to get caught up in the federal conversation, even a few local issues, but as you and I have talked about for many years now, what happens in Jefferson City has almost as is more of a significant impact on your listeners, many of them who live and work in Missouri, than anything that happens in D.C. over a prolonged period of time, and certainly impacts the local issues greatly. So thank you and your show for really lending a microphone to these issues throughout the session.
Yeah, and Rodney, now that things have ended down there, maybe we can get you in the studio one of these weeks.
Oh, absolutely.
All right.
We would be remiss if we did not end with Let's Go Blues. Let's Go Blues.
Absolutely. Rodney Boyd, thank you.
Get more at 971talk.com.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.